Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. Freestyle Dharma Q&A is an occasional series of talks that take a deep dive into topics of curiosity and interest. In today's talk, Lama Kathy discusses why not all things that happen in our lives come about because of karma, but our experience of them always does. What to do when one becomes discouraged doing Dharma practice, and the meaning of Buddhist pilgrimage. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, good morning. Thank you for the gong. I appreciate that. There are days I just can't pull it all together and I need help, so I appreciate it. The gong dakini. So in any case, good morning. It's wonderful. Hello. Hi. It's wonderful to see everybody. This is old home week. This is kind of good. I'm liking it. I'm really liking it. Thank you for being here today. I want to begin by expressing my appreciation for the team that makes the programs here happen every week. The people in the background, such as the board, Kim and Steve and Michael and who else we have? Eric and Chuck, all of the people who are in the background signing the checks, paying the bills, having the meetings to decide which bills to pay, and helping us to work with all of the authorities that we need, who we need to work with in order to get our new building built. We're coming up to a period of time where we will be asking for bids for the new construction. So let's pour a little prayer power on it this week and next, and then we'll let you know how it all goes. Because if you recall from last year, we got a little bit of a, we'll call it a multi-hundred-thousand-dollar surprise when the bids were taken, and we're hoping that with the help of the team we have assembled of helpers that to help us analyze the bids and the and also the project itself and the plans and so forth, that with all of those efforts being put into it, that the cost will be within our tolerances and limits. So if anybody is interested, and you know the prayer that is called the Tashi, T-A-S-H-I, Tashi prayer, you can find a copy of it on the teachings page of lamakathy.net. LamaKathy.net. You can find a copy of it there. You can read that and dedicate the goodness and aspirations of that to our project. Additionally, if you don't have access to that sort of thing, the next best thing to do is to recite and dedicate mantras to us. You can choose any of the mantras you like. Om Mani Padme Hung, the compassion mantra, or Karmapa Cheno, the Karmapa guru mantra. You can do those as well as any other mantra you think will help us. Because I think that the next couple of weeks, some prayer power will help things go better for us. So thank you for that. Additionally, I have a little bit of housekeeping to do at the end. I was told that there is going to be a drawing today for, we were going to have two drawings today, but it looks like we may only have one because I'm not prepared for one of them. But there was a food drive collection and people wrote their names down on the food drive box. And if I knew where that was, I could get the names and we could create slips of paper for that. So if anybody knows where that is, let me know, and I'll do the drawing today. If that's something with which you're unfamiliar, we'll do it next time when I'm here. One way or the other, we will get gifts. Gifts will be given. Prizes will be awarded. Okay. All right. What's that? Door number one, door number two. Oh my gosh, that sounds like, you know, that's Let's Make a Deal, right? Okay, so you know, that's the one thing you can't do with karma. You can't play let's make a deal with your karma. It just is not going to happen. So we have to be careful in that. Okay, today I'm going to give a two-part presentation. Part one is going to be basically a freestyle Dharma talk in which I ask all of you what you would like to know about. And then I give a talk on that subject. And then the second half, I'm going to talk a little bit about what pilgrimage is and why I think I'm going to do one. So, it'll be a personal story about, because you know I did lead 3 pilgrimages here in the United States to Buddhist sites, but I'm going to make a pilgrimage to KTD very soon, and I want to talk a little bit about what that is and why I'm doing it. So for the freestyle portion of our program, it's going to be a little like Q&A, but not, in that if you've got something that you would like addressed in the talk today, I will take it down, and then I will craft my Dharma talk from that. I'm thinking that I'll take 3 main points, and if it looks like I need more, I'll take more. So who would like to ask a question? Yes, ma'am. Accidental karma.
Yeah. Karma kind of spills over into yours.
Mm-hmm.
Like a further explanation of that.
Okay. Yeah. The person is asking about the concept of. I can't believe I said that. I love finding out what I said later. When you speak extemporaneously, it is a little bit treacherous, and that things can come back. And so I'm super glad you're asking about this. Who's asking about a phrase that I used in one of the podcasts called accidental karma, where other people's lives and karma sort of spill over into yours. And are you interested? Because what I would be interested in if I were asking this question would be like, how does that work exactly? How does my karma and another person's karma mesh? Is that kind of what you're asking, or you've got a different...
No, that would summarize it, but actually just the whole thing.
Just the whole thing? Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's just fascinating to me. And yes, how they mesh with yours.
And all that.
And your response is your...
Right.
Actually, your karma.
Got it.
I got that.
Yeah, got it. Okay, got it. I will do my best on this. I'm not being a scholar. I have to be very careful and not exceed my mandate. But I'll do my best within the confines of what I know and what I've heard. So. Okay, that's one. Got another one? Is there another one out there? Uh-oh, slow day. Yes. Hello. Say this again.
You've given up on religion, but you're still searching for that.
And so tell me a little bit about why would a person have given up on religion, or should I just like come up with reasons why people might have?
For me, it would be that just the things that you see in the world don't really align. And then sometimes the science doesn't feel like it lines up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems like it's used for control.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then how do you continue a spiritual path when religion seems to have failed us? Okay. I think I'll try on that one. That's an excellent subject. So thank you. I've got room for one more. Oh, okay, we got a hand here and a hand here, so we'll take both of them. Okay, Tim first.
Well, I would continue on the karma line and how to back off of what you were saying
we are so
to be more receptive or more aware of the things that just rise.
Okay, the person is asking another thing about karma. I love the way you phrase that, how to back off from our usual way of planning everything. And what was the second half?
Well, so to be
and being open.
Aware
yeah.
of the things that arise.
I got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Present themselves for our next moment.
Okay. Being open to the things that present themselves to us. Okay. I really like that. Okay. And then, Jake, you'll be the last one.
Could you just talk a little bit about the Buddhist beliefs around death and rebirth? Also, if someone is a non-Buddhist?
Sure.
Buddhist prayers and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah. The questioner is asking for a brief presentation on the Buddhist concepts and beliefs around death and rebirth, and how and the question I think that you're asking is, can Buddhist prayers benefit a person who is not Buddhist? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a person who hasn't taken. Okay. I think we can. We have a lot we can talk about here, and in fact, each of these could be a freestanding talk. So what we'll do today is we will do just a little bit on each one, and then I will try to develop these a little bit more into one of my talks coming in the fall. I'll take a deeper look at all three of these, four of these questions, and I appreciate you for asking these questions. And I'll try to do a little bit of a longer presentation on it in the fall, because so these are great topics. To begin with, I'm going to start with a short prayer, and this is going to be the four-line refuge prayer in the Tibetan tradition, the one that begins Sanje Chudon Sot. If it's a prayer you are familiar with, feel free to join in. And if it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session of study and understanding to the benefit of yourself and all sentient beings. I'll just recite this prayer one time. O Sanje Chudan Sochi Chunahamla Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Da ji jin so ji bei su nam ki dro la pen chi san je tru par shu. O palin sa we lam ha rin bo che ta gi chi wo pe de ten shu la Kadrin jambu gwane che sun te Ko sun tugging a drup sal du so. Okay, thanks. The talk will be a little bit of a quilt, patchwork quilt today. I do this from time to time just to kind of see what people are thinking and feeling, and how Dharma might be able to assist them in at this moment in their life. Again, these four topics will be topics that I will address later on in longer talks this fall. I think the first two questions are about karma, and that is just a general presentation on what karma is, what it isn't, and how people's karma intermeshes. And the second one is about how to work with a spiritual life when one is moved to give up on religion because of kind of the sorry state of affairs in the world. And the last is the questions about Buddhist concepts around death and rebirth and how we can benefit those who have passed away. So as I say, these will all be separate talks in the fall, but I'll cover them briefly now. The first thing to say about karma is that I have heard quite a few talks about this, but I am by no means an expert. And so I'm going to suggest that in the fall, perhaps, we study the great book by Tralek Rinpoche, and his name is spelled T-R-A-L-E-G, in case you're going to look him up. Tralek Rinpoche wrote a marvelous book called Karma, What It Is, What It Isn't, and Why It Matters. And this presents a historical perspective on how the Buddhist beliefs and practices surrounding karma, how they came about, and how Buddhist concepts of karma differ from Hindu concepts of karma and so on. And so in this way, this book by Tralek Rinpoche then represents a bit of historical treatise on how the teachings of karma evolved in Buddhism and how they differ from other faith traditions. And then he does a deep dive on what karma is. Unfortunately, it's been a while since I looked at the book, so I'm going to just quote for the purpose of these two questions
from the teachings that I have heard from Kempo Karthar Rinpoche and others. My best understanding is that the basic teaching on Buddhism, Buddhist teaching on karma, is contained in the opening stanzas of the book, the Dhammapada, which is the sayings of the Buddha. It's a collected sayings book. And if you're looking up the book, it's Dhammapada, Dhammapada. My favorite translation is by Thomas Byrom, and that's Byrom. He has a really lovely interpretation, and that's the one I'll be quoting from this morning. It starts with the phrase, "We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts, and with our thoughts we make the world." And to me, this is the easiest explanation that the Buddha has given of karma, period. We, as individuals, are, meaning our experience reflects, we are what we think. So our experience reflects the way we think. And by the way, those of you who like drama will know that Shakespeare also used this quotation, but in a different form in Hamlet. When one of the characters says, "Nothing is either good nor bad, but thinking makes it so." And so this means that the inert objects of this world, the things we see and interact with day to day, are neither good nor bad. They are neutral. But it is our experience of them that makes the difference. Kempo Karthar Rinpoche once gave a teaching on karma by placing by pointing to a glass of water that was sitting on his thank you.
We have a GoFundMe.
Is the list. Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate that. We are set. Okay. So this statement of "we are what we think" means that our experience of the world arises in our mind. Now, I know that may be news to you, but it feels like the world happens to us, the outside world happens to us, but in a way, it is our own experience of the world that's influenced by our thoughts. And so Kempo Rinpoche used a glass of water on his table to illustrate this. He said, "There's a glass of water here on the table, and to me, I am a human being, and so I experience this water as refreshment. This is delicious. Mmm. And it is refreshing. But to a fish, it's an environment, and so they feel differently about the water than you or I. We need it to live in one way, and they need it to live in another way. But let's say that we were an animal afflicted by rabies. We would be afraid of this water. And so this water would symbolize a threat to us." And so you can see that how the same object can be seen by different beings is because of how they have thought about it and how they have developed thoughts and feelings about it in the past. So you could say that right now, who we are right now, is a summary of all of our experience. If you believe in one life only, then it's all of our experiences in this life. But if you take the long view, like the Tibetan Buddhists do, and think that we have lived uncountable times in many, many previous lifetimes, you will see that we have quite a lot of experience to draw upon in forming our thoughts and ideas and reactions. And so what we can do now is begin to work with our reactions to things that we experience and change our karma, so to speak, by how we respond to the things that are happening to us. In the next verses, the Buddha explains it a little further. He says, "If we think, speak, and act with an impure mind, suffering follows us, just as surely as the wheel follows the ox that draws the cart." And then he said, "If we think, speak, and act with a pure mind, happiness follows us as though it were a shadow, an unshakable shadow." And so in this way, he teaches Buddhist ethics for the first time in this printed volume. He says, if we think, speak, and act with an impure mind. The impure mind is the mind of clinging and fixation. Those of you who know the Four Noble Truths, suffering, its cause, the solution, and the path to freedom from suffering, will know that in the second noble truth, the Buddha said that clinging and fixation is the cause of suffering. As Pema Chodron, the great American teacher, once said, if something hurts so much, it's because I'm holding on so tight. And so if we believe in this, then we will know that the solution to suffering then is to let go. And so if we are experiencing something and grasping onto sort of the badness of it, if that's a word, then we will suffer more than if we have more of a neutral approach and feeling toward it. Or even a different approach and feeling. In Buddhism, for example, people sometimes are taught that they can approach their suffering by universalizing it, thinking, okay, I'm feeling pain today, I'm feeling suffering today, but right now, at this moment, in this universe, there are many people feeling the same way as I feel. I think of them and myself, and I make the aspiration here and now that I and all beings are free from this kind of suffering. And so that's one Buddhist response, one way a Buddhist can respond to suffering. Another way a person could respond to suffering would be to say, I hate this suffering. In fact, I hate all these other people in the world who are suffering with me because they're not suffering enough. I'm suffering too much. And then I'm going to make war on all those people who I don't think are suffering enough, and so on and so on, which would just add negativity to the situation. It would just make things worse. So you can see we have a choice. Whenever we experience anything, we can increase our grasping and clinging at the moment we experience something, or we can use what we experience as an opportunity to learn how to let go. And this is not easy. That's why I think they call it the practice of Buddhism rather than the instant perfection of Buddhism. It's because we have to gradually approach these concepts and gradually take them in and gradually try to work with them and make them our own. So this is, I guess you could say, why it is a path that you could actually say it's a lifelong path. And again, if you believe in future lives and beyond. One of my teachers, a Tibetan Lama named Taisitra Rinpoche, he had this in mind when he said, even if I improve as a person only 1% in this life that I'm having right now, in 100 lifetimes, I'll be Buddha. Which I think it makes sense. I mean, because if every day in this world, in this life, as human beings, right here, right now, if we improve one of our habits, just one, if we improve even one habit then in a day, then gradually over time, we will improve more and more and more, and our life will become better and better. And to me, this is the good news about karma. And most people think that there's only one kind of karma, and that's like bad karma. But there's also virtuous karma. And this is why the Buddha had two verses in this section. The first one, if you think, speak, and act with an impure mind, that is the grasping, clinging mind, then suffering is the result. Because if you're only out for yourself, it may take a long time for the suffering you have created through your karma to catch up to you. I mean, some people say, why is it that bad people always seem to escape the effects of their karma? And the Buddha's teacher would say, just wait. You may not have the capability of seeing it when it hits, but it's inevitable it will hit. We just haven't seen it yet. We may not live long enough to see it, but it's inevitable. Because unless a person takes hold of their life and regrets their negative actions and purifies their karma through this regret process and resolution not to repeat negativity, they will continue to repeat it, and it'll just get bigger and bigger. So in this second set of verses, the Buddha also said, if you think, speak, and act with a pure mind, then happiness is the result. And what this means is that if we are kind to ourselves and kind to others, then we feel better. And that we may still have misfortunes happen in our lives, but we won't experience them the same way
that we would experience them if we were full of the sort of non-virtuous mind state of grasping and clinging. And so this is, I guess, the easiest teaching on karma that I can think of is the one that's in those opening verses of the Buddhist teaching. He goes on to say in the next verses that he describes a situation where a person has been harmed by another. And they think, oh, look how that person beat me and abused me. See how that person threw me down and robbed me. Basically, he said, live with such thoughts, and you live in hate. And then he repeats the phrase again, look how this person beat me and abused me, look how he threw me down and how he robbed me. And then the Buddha says, abandon such thoughts and live in love. And then basically he's telling us to stop holding a grudge. Because those grudges, as my friends in 12-step like to say, are like, nursing a grudge is like drinking poison, expecting the other person to die. So because the grudge that we're nursing is a non-virtuous clinging mind state that really just only hurts us. Holding a grudge is not the same thing as seeking justice. We have to see the difference between the two. There is actually a feeling, you can even feel the difference when you think about these concepts of seeking justice and holding a grudge. They are actually different. And we'd have to continue to analyze the difference between those two so that we can hold ourselves back from falling into grudge behavior when we're trying to correct an injustice. Anyhow, that's a side comment, but you get the picture. And so when the Buddha says, abandon such thoughts and live in love, what he's saying is stop holding grudges. Stop working on the negative things about everybody. Oh, that person is bad, and that person is bad, and this person is bad, and this person. In fact, we sometimes think that everybody else is bad, and we're the only ones who are good. Or it could be the opposite. We think everybody else is good, and we're bad. It's still clinging and fixation. It's just aimed in a different direction. And so we have to abandon that kind of hatred also against ourselves. And he says, abandon these and live in love, meaning live in a state in which you see the suffering of other people, in which you have empathy for them and for yourself, and then use that empathy to develop the internal wish. Because when you see other people are like you, you begin to feel empathy, and then you can use that empathy to develop the wish that they be happy. May I and all beings be happy. And these are teachings from the very earliest teachings that were given by the Buddha. So these are the Buddha's sort of introductory comments on karma. And so for the questioner who's saying, well, how do other people experience karma? Well, they have their own karma. You have yours, and they have theirs. But there could be that you have karma together, and that in a previous lifetime you either helped one another or harmed one another, and then the relationship in this life will seem new and different to you, but it might actually be playing out and completing something very old. Kempo Kartha Rinpoche was giving a lecture a few years ago, and he said, have you ever wondered why sometimes when you meet people, you instantly like them? Or sometimes when you meet people, you instantly dislike them? He said, because Tibetan Buddhists believe in previous lives, we believe that probably you had some kind of negative interaction with them in the past. Actually, they could have harmed you, or actually, you could have harmed them. And there's just no way to know. Because unless we're Buddhas, and we fully transcend the ignorance of not knowing the nature of our mind and all of its vastness and being able to, with that arrival at awakening and Buddhahood, when you arrive at Buddhahood and awakening, then you can see all of your past lives and all of the future ones as well. And so until that moment of awakening, we don't know. We can't read the tags on a relationship. This relationship is karma. This is your karma, or this is just somebody you just met for the first time, really? You know, so in any case, because there are these karmic elements to relationships, it makes things more complicated, because relationships are complicated anyhow, because we're still trying to figure out how to be a real person, a decent human being, and then this other person comes into our life and evokes feelings in us, either of good feelings or not so good feelings, and then we have to figure out how to handle all those feelings while trying to live a decent and good life. It's complicated. Being a person is hard. And so what we have to do is cut ourselves and other people some slack, not that we allow bad behavior to go on. That's not what I mean. But we have to have some empathy for their suffering, the suffering that makes them act out badly. Because sometimes, as the bumper sticker says, mean people are suffering. Okay? I saw the bumper sticker. I saw it. Mean people are suffering. And so because they're suffering, they act out, and we think, well, they're bad, but really they're just suffering, and they don't know what to do with it. And so this is not a full answer to your question, but sometimes when you have karma with someone, it's because of you're harming them and or them harming you. Let's say that you harm them. Then that means they're your karmic creditor. Let's use a financial analogy. I owe somebody money, and so they're my creditor. I owe somebody a karmic debt of having harmed them, and so they're going to be a creditor. They won't even know why they're coming after me, maybe. But they're coming to exact some kind of payment, some kind of... You might call it revenge, but they don't know it that way. They don't see it that way. They just think that I'm bad and I'm wrong and they got to fix that. You see what I'm saying? Does that answer your question to a certain extent? No, it does not answer. Yeah, so the question... for the time limit. So what you're saying is that there's really no such thing as accidental karma. I think that's the main thing that I need to say, so I need to go back and correct myself. And it's there's no such thing as mistaken karma. What there is... Okay, yeah, there is no such thing as accidental karma where, you know, something happens to you and it's, you know, the Tibetans do have a teaching that they call adventitious. They call it the adventitious, which adventitious is a funny word in English. It can have many meanings. So the translators who called things that, because my teacher once said, not everything that happens to you is karma. Sometimes the things that happen to you are just adventitious circumstances. I tried to use the word accident, and they corrected me. They said there is no such thing as accidental karma. So if I said that, then I'm wrong. Okay, so, but there are things that happen to us adventitiously, meaning that it's, we're in the middle of summer, right? And in the weather forecast, they're going to say things like pop-up thunderstorms in the afternoon. Right? You've heard that phrase, pop-up thunderstorms? Well, how does a pop-up thunderstorm happen, right? It's moisture rising from the earth because of the heat, and then the moisture forms into clouds, and with the circumstances and the wind and everything else being just right, kaboom, a thunderstorm happens. That's what they're talking about. Where just conditions come together and something happens, and it has nothing whatsoever to do with your karma. And it can happen. For example, I said to Kemper Rinpoche, I said, so you mean, I used the example of a person being hit by a bicycle. I don't know. You know, so I made this up, so it's just as good as any other made up analogy. I said, so Rinpoche, so what you're saying is that it's about the suffering and not about the thing that happens. It's about the suffering and not about the thing that happens. And he said, yes. I said, so my stepping off the curb and being hit by the bicycle might not be my karma, but the pain of embarrassment and the bruises on my arm and things like that that I feel bad about and the physical suffering I experience, that is my karma? And he said, yes. So me getting hit by the bicycle may have had nothing to do with my karma, but the experience of feeling the embarrassment of stepping off a curb and being hit by something you didn't see coming, that's embarrassing. And then on top of that, you have the physical suffering and pain from the injuries. He said that actually could be the result of your karma, even though the bicycle had nothing to do with it. So I hope that helps. It still doesn't help, because there's still parts of it that you're wondering about. Yeah, sorry. Because what happens is when we hurt other people, or we hurt ourselves, it puts an impression, a karmic impression in our mind stream. And that karmic impression is going to color the way we experience the world.
that impression, that karmic impression, is going to color the way we see the world and experience the world. And the way we see and experience the world is going to be impacted by that impression until we remove it or until it comes to fruition. It's going to stick with us until we have experienced it. So let's say I hurt somebody else, and then later, much later, in another way, I feel hurt. It could, you know, you see what I'm saying? That's how it is. I have put within myself the ability to feel that hurt and that embarrassment. I have kind of placed it in there, and until I take it out, it's still there. And that's why the Buddhists practice confession practices, where we sit in front of the Buddha and our imagination, and we tell the Buddha, here are virtuous things I've done, I rejoice in those, and here are the non-virtuous things I've done, I feel regret for those. And that's why Buddhists do that. So hope that helps. It's a good start. And we'll talk more about it when we get into the book study. I think that'll be a really good thing to do. And the other person who asked about karma asked about the how to break our way of planning things. I think this is like super a good idea to think about this, because when we think we're in charge of everything and we try to control everything, number one, we're mistaken. Because the Buddha gave this great teaching, he called it impermanence. So that means that everything is always changing. Everything is always changing. Our environment, we are changing. Everything is changing. Everything is always changing. And so if we try to make things not change, excuse me, thing that is happening in my life, please don't change. If I like you, I want you to stay forever. And if I don't like you, I want you to go away as quickly as possible. So here's me trying to control the world, but it's not going to be like that. We try to adjust the levers on samsara, you know, so that we have the coolness or the temperature or whatever that we want. We could try to adjust the levers on samsara so we don't suffer in specific ways and so forth and so on. But that's not given to us to do. We can only adjust things so much. And so the idea of trying to control and plan is how we try to control impermanence. And we get the illusory idea that we can somehow beat the system and somehow get the better of impermanence and have impermanence happen to everybody else except us. Everybody else is going to have suffering except me. I did not order it, and I will not accept delivery. Is that starting to answer your question? Our way of planning everything can really get in the way of our just being in this world, because we spend so much time planning everything and trying to control everything that we miss everything. We miss everything. We miss out on breathing and the joy of a sunset, and we miss out on the joy of just life, which if we ease up a little bit on the planning, we can still plan our lives, but we have to plan our lives with a sense of realism. A mother of preschool children taught me about this. I was visiting her in her home in northern Ohio, and at some point in her day, she was planning to take the children out on a field trip. I was going to go somewhere, and she was taking children on a field trip. And she said, she tapped her hands on the table and made it into a little chant. We're going to the zoo. We're going to the zoo. But what if the zoo is closed? We'll go to the park. We'll go to the park. And what if they're working on the park? We're going to, you know. And so she would present her children with things that might happen today that isn't what they planned, that aren't what they planned, things that are not what they planned, and how they might think creatively in that moment. I thought that was like the most brilliant thing I'd ever seen. And I said, if only adults could do that. I mean, seriously, being an adult, sometimes it's not all it's cracked up to be. Because if we could just chant, we expect to live forever. We expect to live forever. But what if we don't? You know, or I expect this person to stay in my life forever because I asked them to. But what if it doesn't happen that way? You know, and so forth and so on. I mean, I'm, of course, being facetious about something that could be quite serious. But I don't mean to be joking too much, but you get the point that if we could just be more like that mom and see that there are, that actually a lot of things are actually okay. Not getting what we want is actually okay. Then we will be more open. I think that's what the questioner was asking about. We will be more open to the things that arise spontaneously for us that we might actually enjoy. We might actually get something out of. We might actually learn from. What if something happens and we lose our temper in this, you know, this scenario? We're going to the zoo and then something doesn't happen and we lose our temper. Then we can say, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to make mistakes. How do we make amends for those mistakes? And, you know, so it encourages creative thinking. And that's why we practice meditation, because on our meditation seats, we have all kinds of scenarios arise for us. Does this happen to you when you meditate? It does for me. I'm meditating and I'm trying to think of my, to place my attention on my breath, and then I'm thinking about something that happened yesterday or something's going to happen tomorrow. And, you know, we're going to meditate. But now I'm in this thing that happened yesterday. And it's really painful, right? So what do? We notice the thought that we've had. We label it thinking. We let it go. And then gently, the word gently is very important here, gently bring our attention back to the breath for a fresh start. And then we have another short period of attention, which will be followed by another period of mental wandering. And then we use the same technique. We label it thinking, we let it go, and then we gently bring it back to the breath for a fresh start. And by this gentle returning again and again, that gentility is important because it gives us the flexibility to know how to work with things when things go wrong. That mother was preparing her children for disappointment and how they could creatively work with their own feelings of disappointment so that they didn't have to cling so tightly to their idea of what they thought things should be. And so if we can do that, then we would be able to take advantage of different paths that we otherwise couldn't see. So there you have it. And eventually in Buddhism, besides letting go of thoughts, in compassion meditation, we take on a thought. And the thought we take on is the thought of being a bodhisattva in training. We are training to be a Buddha. And by training to be a Buddha, we're going to try to be more present for ourselves and for others. We're going to try to wish, just wish for the happiness of others. Wish for the happiness of ourselves and others, even though it doesn't seem to make sense in this world. But by wishing to make others' lives better, we will make our own lives better and we'll be able to respond to those things that suddenly arise. So I hope that helped. Did that help the questioner who asked about that?
Well, it helped a lot.
It helped? Okay, good.
The follow-up question would be, how do we keep from being perceived as not really given us?
Oh, right. Yeah, sometimes, yeah, the questioner is saying, he had a follow-up, which is, how do we prevent being seen as a person who doesn't give a darn, you know, because we're so flexible. You know, they get to be them, and we get to be us. And I think, to me, that's the first thing we should remember, that they have their own karma, and they're going to see things. They may see us as being not, you know, wishy-washy or something. But I prefer to think, instead of being wishy-washy, I prefer to think flexible. A person is flexible. You've got to be flexible. This world's going to throw stuff at you all the time. If you can be flexible, that's a plus. So, you know, if people think you don't care, you can let them know you do care. But you've got to be flexible because this world's going to deal you all kinds of stuff you don't expect. So I'm thinking to redefine it. Now, if you are a practitioner of the bodhisattva path in Buddhism, where your whole life is aimed at trying to nurture the thought, may I and all beings be happy, then everything that happens to you will be seen as an opportunity to practice that. And the more you get that into that habit of being a bodhisattva in training, the more often it will occur to you that you care very much about the benefit of self and others, not just yourself, but others. You think about and care about the benefit of others, and that's what you're concerned with. And that's a great secret identity to have. You know, like the superheroes in the movies, they have secret identities. Well, that's our secret identity, is that we're bodhisattva in training. And that's incredibly purposeful. You know, you have a very purposeful life that way. So I appreciate that. Be able to only address the giving up on religion briefly. But I will give a short answer to that, and then I'll spend the rest of the time on the death and rebirth issue. I'll tell you something. What we've just talked about gives partial clues as to the answer to that question, because it is very easy to be disappointed by things that are imperfect in this world. So easy. If we have expectations of any kind, those expectations, if we have an expectation of this or that or the other thing, we're basically saying, if this expectation is not met, I will be unhappy. That's what expectations are. They're a drawing of a line and saying, if things go past this line, I will not be happy. And so when we have expectations of other people, it makes it very difficult for them to ever meet those expectations. And in fact, what's really interesting, there's a manual for a Tibetan Buddhist monastery. This was back in the 1800s. Somebody quoted this comment, don't expect much of other people, pray instead. So what they're basically saying is that other people will always disappoint you, is basically what they're saying. So it's really easy to see that it's easy to give up on organizations, and it's easy to give up on human beings, but we should never give up on ourselves, and we should never give up on the things that we have taken refuge in. And if a person has taken Buddhist refuge, that is enlightenment, we can't really be disappointed by enlightenment. It's a good thing. Enlightenment is good. And we can't be disappointed about the path to enlightenment, because that's good. And then the Sangha, yeah, the human beings can disappoint us, but the enlightened ones will never disappoint us. The enlightened ones will never disappoint us. The humans will let us down, but the enlightened ones will. So I'm thinking that Buddhist refuge in some ways is unique, in that the Buddha is this perfection, and he's no longer with us, so we follow his path, and so on and so forth. So you'll always see disagreements between science and religion, because they actually kind of developed. Some people say they developed together. Some people say they developed separately. So whichever way you believe, it's okay. The Dalai Lama was once quoted as saying, if science ever disagrees with Buddhism, we'll change Buddhism. We'll just change it, because it's about truth. That's one of the meanings of the word dharma, which we use in Buddhism as the describing noun for the teachings of the Buddha. It's dharma. Another meaning for the word dharma is truth. And so the Dalai Lama said, since the Buddha was all about truth, if science says that something's different, then it's different. Although I think that sometimes interpretations are fun, because if you go, some people complain about the Buddha because he said the world was flat, and the world, of course, is round. And they say, well, you know, he didn't know anything about anything. But now we're finding out that the universe is flat. So I don't know what world he was talking about. So, I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting. I'm just saying. I'm going to give him better benefit of the doubt. But, you know, finding out about my own mind, I'll trust him forever on that. You know what my teacher said? Very first visit to Columbus in September of 1977, Kenpo Karthrimshe gave talks in Central Ohio.
And you know what he said through his translator? He said, take what you need and leave the rest, which all of my friends in 12-step will recognize. Take what you can use, and then don't worry about the rest of it. You don't have to believe it. Just take what you need and use that. So I hope that helps. So, okay. Now, in terms of the other question, which is about the Buddhist concept of death and rebirth, what's really fascinating is that the two previous questions on karma helped a lot with this. And that is that we see that we have relationships with people that span lifetimes. And so it is without doubt we will see them again. Where and how and will we know it? It may be different. But all of these beings we have relationships with, whether they have passed away from our sight in this life or not, we still have the love. We may not have their actual presence in our lives, but the love will never end. And so Kempo Karth Rinpoche has called that love that we have for those who have passed away the conduit or the channel for our benefit to them. And so when we pray for those we love who have passed away, then what happens is that once a person has passed away, the Buddhist teaching is that some of them instantly take rebirth somewhere else. And some of the Buddhist teachings say they go through an in-between period called a bardo, where they experience a mental body like the body we have in dreams, and then they go on a series of adventures, and they're exposed to different blessings and so on, and sometimes they'll meet the blessings, and sometimes they'll run from the blessings, just like this life. Sometimes we meet a blessing, sometimes we run from the blessing. But they will eventually, through the force of their karma, be guided to a rebirth. And what Kempo Karth Rinpoche said is that whether they have taken instant rebirth somewhere else or are in the bardo during what is said to be the seven-week period after death, no matter where they are, our prayers will benefit them. He says it's not like, he used the phrase, he didn't use the exact words infallibly addressed, but that's what he meant. That because of our connection to them, our benefit will get to them. It's inevitable because we are connected to them. So the benefit that we dedicate to them will reach them in some way, shape, or form. It may show up as one thing, it may show up as another. But our love and benefit that we send to them will definitely arrive. I use the example of a letter going in the post office. That may not be infallibly addressed. And it might end up in the dead letter office. But when we send love and compassion and virtue toward the people we care for, they will receive it. There's no doubt about them receiving it. Just like they receive our love in this life. It's the same thing. It's without words. Sometimes love is expressed without words. Sometimes love is expressed without gestures. It's just love. His Holiness the 17th Karmapa has spoken rather eloquently about this. He says, I meet a lot of people, he says, and some of them think, well, I gave my love to so-and-so and they didn't return it. And I feel bad now. And he says, I kind of wonder about this, he said, because after all, love is just love. It doesn't have to be returned. It's just love. And you benefit from that love that you give. As long as you don't expect something in return, the love that you give is yours. And you'll never lose it. And it actually benefits you to give your love and to feel this love. And then he even, on another occasion, said, we will be apart, he said. Because he was talking to a group of people he would soon be parted from. And he said, but I will tell you that I will take my love and I will place it in the moon. And he said, so when you see the moon, you will remember my love and have the sense that I am present with you. I just think it's a wonderful way of placing one's intention out there, and it will gradually bear some kind of fruit for the person it's dedicated to. So the person doesn't have to be Buddhist to benefit from Buddhist prayers. You can pray for people who are non-Buddhist. You can pray for people who even maybe had a complicated relationship with Buddhism during their lifetime. Even if they kind of disliked it, they kind of thought it was strange, they will still benefit from your prayers. Kempo Rinpoche said that those who pass away while they're in the bardo and so forth, he said they have a sort of a mundane kind of clairvoyance because they don't have the body to cover them up anymore, you know, to cover up their minds. And he says, and they may actually be aware of when you talk about them, and they may come near you. So when you think of them, always try to think or recite a prayer, like Om Mani Padme Hum, the compassion mantra, or something like that. So that's a little bit about death and dying. And many, many more things that we can talk about, and we'll do that in a dedicated talk on this subject in the fall. And now, at the conclusion of my talk, I'm going to talk a little bit about pilgrimage. Now, those of you who know about me know that I have this strong affection for Buddha images. I love them. I own some, and I love the ones we have here. And part of the reason I love them is because they're artistically made and they're beautiful, but also because our teachers have filled them with mantras, and there's even a small packet of relics inside them from an enlightened being, so that they become capable of giving a blessing. And Kempo Rinpoche said, blessings are given without words. When a lama puts their hand upon your head or touches their forehead to your forehead, as is done in the Tibetan tradition, they're imparting a blessing, and that blessing is given without words. There is an impact that beings can have. Everybody knows we can be influenced by words, but sometimes we can actually be influenced by the presence of people alone. Some people feel good when they're in the presence of His Holiness the Dalai Lama and other beings who have great awakening. Sometimes they feel this goodness in the presence of beautiful temples and statues. And Kempo Rinpoche said that when you visit such places, you're sort of going to meet the Buddha. So the journey of going to meet the Buddha is special all by itself. Right now, we don't recognize that we have Buddha nature. We don't know it. It's as though we have a secret treasure buried within us and we have no idea that it's there. But the Buddha taught that every being has Buddha nature. Every being has the potential to awaken. Awaken from the sleep of ignorance. Awaken from the sleep of thinking that we are separate from others and cannot love them. The illusion that we are somehow superior to everyone. We have not awakened from this ignorance yet, but we have the potential to awaken from it. And that Buddha nature makes us valuable. It gives us a value we do not have to earn. We have intrinsic, every being has intrinsic value. And this is the basis of all Buddhist ethics, is that all beings are worthy of respect. We may still need to put criminals in jail, and to correct injustice where we see it. But we should always remember and treasure other beings, remembering that they someday could be Buddhas. So at first, for us who are sort of asleep to this idea, pilgrimage, we think we're going to see the Buddha, and that the Buddha is separate, she is in this place. And we're going to go meet the Buddha. We're going to meet the Buddha. We're going to meet the Buddha. And yes, we will encounter obstacles along the way. It's inevitable. All pilgrimages have obstacles along the way. And so it was that several years ago, I took three groups, 20 people each, to see the first group. The first group, we went to see the monuments, the Buddhist monuments. They call them Chuten in Tibetan, or stupa in Sanskrit. They are they're geometric sculptures that mimic a Buddha seated in meditation. There's a spire at the top and a sun and a moon, and there's a vase that represents the Buddha's body, and then a set of risers that are based on the idea of a throne upheld by lions and a lotus flower upon which the Buddha sits and things like that. So these monuments have been scattered by Buddhist devotees all over America. They're everywhere. And in fact, I found one behind a restaurant once. That was really fascinating. And so I decided to take a tour of people to go see these. So the first one, we went to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and started there. And yes, we had a bus driver. And don't you know, he had a great time. He had no idea that he was taking a group of Buddhists on a pilgrimage, but he did it. And so then we went to, from Albuquerque, we went to Santa Fe. And then we went to Taos and to Cuesta and so on and so forth. And then to Crestone, Colorado, where there are four or five of these Buddhist monuments, and we did prayers in front of each one. And Kempo Kartha Rinpoche had told us that when we are in front of a blessed image, we can actually make an aspiration. The images on this shrine, for example, all have relics in them. So each and every one of them has the potential to be a good source of blessing for you. So if you ever are worried about something or feeling bad about something, you can come in front of one of these images and make an aspiration. May I and all beings be free of this or that kind of suffering. May I and all beings practice Dharma to the best of our ability. May I be able to do a retreat. May I be able to practice Dharma well. May I be able to get good test scores. Yes, some people pray for that too. But the idea is that we make aspirations and that doing it in front of the Buddha is more powerful than doing it alone. And so it was the 2 years, several years ago, I did these pilgrimages. I did three of them, one to the monuments of New Mexico and Colorado, and then a second one to just the monuments in Colorado because we missed some the first time. And then third, we did the monuments of the northeastern New York. It was wonderful. But I got called to go on a pilgrimage recently to our home monastery, Karmatriyana Dharma Chakra, in Woodstock, New York. And you might think, well, that doesn't sound like much. You're going to one place. What's so much of a pilgrimage about that? And that is, I had to use something that one of the earlier questioners said. I had to be open to things that present themselves and not worry about my expectations and my plans. So about 2 weeks ago, Lama Karma Drodol, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche's nephew, who now currently serves as the president of our Karmatriyana Dharma Chakra Monastery, he called me and he said, Rinpoche is expecting all of the center lamas to be at KTD for the entirety of the 6 weeks of Karma Chagme reading transmission that's being given by the visiting master from Tibet. And I said, oh? I said, well, I'm going to California. I go to California every August, and I will be there for about 2 weeks. And he said, yeah, but he's expecting all of you to be there. And I said, and then before and after that, I was going to go to Connecticut to teach and then Pennsylvania to teach. He said, yeah, I know, but he's expecting. And so I had this collision in my mind. I said, let me think about it and call you back. I hung up the phone. I looked at my husband, who was sitting across the room from me, and I said, two things are colliding in my head, and I don't like it. Not wanting to disappoint Rinpoche, that's a thing. And not wanting to disappoint other people, that's a thing. And they are colliding in my mind right now, and it hurts. And I said, so, okay, I know what to do. So I called him back and said, okay, I'll do it. But that means I had to call the coordinator of four centers, who was coordinating the visit of four centers in California, and say, next year, and Hartford and Pennsylvania, and say, later this year. But it also means that I'll be leaving you for a while, and I'm going to miss you a lot. I will try my best. I'm due to travel next weekend somewhere else, but I am. This reading transmission doesn't start until the first part of August. It ends the last part of August. I may try to come home. I may not make it. There's a break, and then after the break, the next 3 weeks starts, and that will end at the end of September. So I may make it back. I may not. I will try to be here next week just to say hi to everybody. I am not scheduled to teach next week.
I changed my travel schedule, but I will be here, but I'll be here just to kind of answer questions and be here for people. And I think I'm doing interviews. Pam doesn't know it yet, but I think I'm doing interviews next week as well. So watch your email for details on that. But I just want to let you know that I had to be open to this thing that happened that I didn't expect and that caused me to feel some conflict because of my plans. And I thought to myself after I said yes, I said, death is like this, isn't it? I know, I'm just going to KTD. But I mean, and some people might say that's a pure realm, you know, so it's okay. But I mean, it is like that, isn't it? Milarepa said, like a thunderclap. You know, it happens and you don't even know. And so I guess I had a thunderclap. And it threw all my plans in the air, and that's a good thing. So I will have all of you with me while I am there. And I'll send messages in a bottle. Say, you know, I'll have somebody drive it to the St. Lawrence, and then they'll throw it in there, and it'll get to Erie, and then somebody is going to have to portage it down here. So, you know. But I will try to send messages and let you know. But you will all be with me, and I will be praying for each and every one of you while I am gone, because you guys are great, and you continue to bring greatness and your Buddha natures to this place every week. So I thank you. I know it's hard to be here every week, but come as often as you can and bring your goodness and your sincerity to this room, because this room feels good. I know. Sometimes the temperature's not what we like, but the room feels good because we've put so much meditation into this room. And I have a feeling that that when we leave it, it's still going to feel good for a while. So I have to stop here because I have run over by 3 minutes. So these are the names of people who donated, and I have gifts. Oh, we actually have the other one too. Oh my gosh. Could you do me a favor and bring to me the, also, no, I need those, but also bring the mala and the, okay. Oh my Lord, you actually did this? What a nice guy. Okay. I need a helper. Okay. First thing I'm going to give out then is, I'm sorry to do this while you're all having to wait.
That one thing,
yeah, and there should be a mala over there. If there's no mala, it's okay. I'll have to deal with that later. So, Jeremy, will you pick one of these for me? Okay, and if you got two, that's okay. Yeah. Okay, whose name is that?
Joseph
Francik. Okay, Joe Francik. Believe it or not, you get a book. I know, you're always giving me books. So I'm like super sorry about this, but you get the Dalai Lama's Book of Wisdom. So that's for you, okay? All right, yay. Okay, second person who gave food to our food drive who is going to get a prize. Go, Jeremy.
I'm trying not to.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And that is?
Joanna.
Johanna, who is not here. Is it J-O-H-A-N-N-A? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Johanna Garber, she's going to get a Dalai Lama Path to Tranquility daily wisdom book. So, all right. So, that's fantastic. Really appreciate that. So, thank you for helping out. And now I'm going to do this one. I had to put the names. We had a fund drive on, we have a fund drive on GoFundMe to help pay for the rebuilding of our center, which was destroyed by fire and January of 2016, and it's still up there. So if you're hearing the podcast, please go to GoFundMe. Send, put in the word Columbus KTC and give us money, please. We're almost all the way to our goal. We're just a few hundred thousand short. If you have just $5, it's great. And so during the last few weeks from the Buddhist to between two Buddhist holidays. I said anybody who gives, anything, $5, they get the potential, they get an entry in a drawing for a mala and a treasure vase. And so this will be the person who wins the mala.
And it's Kashmira Asnani. So Kashmira wins the mala. So now, who's going to get the treasure vase? I don't know, right? The people who donated over $100 got three entries. Sorry, it's just we wanted to help them out. And the person who is Pamela Thies, T-H-I-E-S, she's probably not here, but we will find her, and we will give her this Zambala treasure vase. So thanks to everybody who participated and sent their good wishes and their money to us for these things. So we'll sit quietly now at the conclusion and dedicate the goodness of our session. We dedicate the goodness of this session to all beings who suffer, wherever they are, in whatever fashion they live. We make the aspiration that they are freed from suffering, that they come to happiness and then to Buddhahood, and that coming to Buddhahood, they benefit all of us endlessly. We silently dedicate our merit with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.